You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to, watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, eight more rate hikes ahead. Can you believe it? Person you're about to hear from has been calling this, called it on the nose, but any news is good news when it comes to Wall Street. And hey, just keep laying those interest rate hikes on. Maybe if we do 100 basis points, the market will hit new all-time high records. But here with us is Michael Pento, Pento Portfolio Strategies. You find him at pentoport.com. And Michael, it's 3/22/22. Do you know where your portfolio is?
Well, it was, you know, mine wasn't, but most portfolios, I think the S&P is down 6%, the NASDAQ's down like double that amount. But then, you know, you gotta love Wall Street, don't you? You love it, Kerry? So yeah. They trotted out the Tom Lees of the world and, you know, Brian Belsky's of the world. Hey, everything is wonderful. Everything is great. So what they were saying is the reason for this rally is because the first time the Fed has hiked interest rates in the past, they begin a hiking cycle, last 13 times, the stock market on average is up 7.7%. Okay, not my data. I think this is you know, one of those deep state of Wall Street, you know, wirehouses data. So, hence, Kerry, the Fed hiked rates by 25 basis points in March, just like, you know, a week ago. Hey, buy this, because they're going to be a 7.7% rally. And I heard one guy who I actually respect say it's going to be a 20% rally. Well, I mean, this rate hiking cycle is absolutely unique. And there's five reasons why that's the case. I just want to say one thing before I give you those five reasons. The last rate hiking cycle was in 2017. Throughout the entire year, the Fed hiked rates by 50 basis points. But now, this year, we've got people like James Bullard saying, we're going to go not to 200 basis points on the Fed funds rate. We're going to go to 3%, 300 basis points. And Waller, also on the Federal Open Market Committee, also assented to that notion. So we're talking about a massive spike in interest rates. And this rate hiking cycle is completely unique. And I'll get to that after you ask me a question.
Okay, so if all we need to do to make the stock market go up is raise rates, why haven't they been doing it for all these years if it's such a good thing for the market? This was like one time I had this guy on who is some professor at Columbia University, and he tried to explain to me how food stamps increase wealth. And I said, and welfare programs increase wealth. And I said, well, if that's the case, let's just put everybody on food stamps. Let's give everybody welfare, and we'll all be rich. And he said, well, now you're making fun of me. And I said, yeah, correct. It's absurd.
You know, it reminds me of a particular slimy person that came on a show recently, 60 Minutes, and explained to Leslie Stahl that he was doing the American public a favor. This guy from Wall Street, who's buying up huge tracts of single family homes and giving people the American dream, which was the ability to rent a house.
Oh, that's the dream.
By first making them unaffordable. I mean, first of all, Wall Street owns 30%. Investors own 30%.
Yeah, we saw that. Yeah.
And this person is trying to claim that since people don't want to own a home anymore, they want to rent the home. He's making rents more affordable by first making home ownership unaffordable. I mean, Wall Street has the greatest of all spins, but let me give you five reasons why this hiking cycle is unique and different than all the others before it. Number one, the Fed is now tightening into a slowdown, a slowdown in global growth and particularly U.S. growth due to that massive fiscal cliff that we just went over and continue to go over. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Normally, when a Fed is hiking rates, they're trying to get ahead of inflation and they're trying to get ahead of growth that is growing more and more quickly. This is the exact opposite. Growth in Q4 was 6.9% SAAR. This quarter is going to be more like 1. It'll have a 1% handle. And earnings are going to crash from 45% down to low single digits this year. So the economy is already rapidly decelerating. Fed is hiking into that. Number two is, normally the Fed is hiking because inflation is high, but this is an inflation that's a 40-year high. And if you calculated it pre-Boskin Commission, you'd see that it's an all-time high rate of U.S. inflation. It's closer to 20%, Kerry, than it is 7.9.
That's correct.
So the third reason that is uniquely different is that this time the yield curve, the spread between the 10-year note and the 2-year note, is 20 basis points. Kerry, normally that yield curve is much, much wider. You're talking about 200, 300, 400 basis points when the Fed starts a rate hiking cycle. It's 1/5 of 1%. So the Fed cannot hike more than 1 or 2 times before they invert the yield curve. And every time they invert the yield curve, we have a recession. So that's the third reason, right? The fourth reason is, I'm getting a little older here, so I get myself. The fourth reason is that the Fed is not just hiking rates this time aggressively, they're also going to do QT, quantitative tightening. What is quantitative tightening, Kerry? It is destruction of money supply. It is the exact reverse of QE. QE creates money from nothing. It's a couple of strokes on a keyboard, and they buy bonds, particularly mortgage bonds and treasury bonds. Sometimes they buy corporate debt too, Kerry. No, don't you know?
Right.
This time they're destroying money. So the money get the bonds mature at the Fed. Somebody has to, the money comes out of the economy now. It's not coming from the Fed. It's coming from the economy. It's sent to the Fed. The Fed destroys that money. That's how it works, Mr. Powell, in case you don't know. That's quantitative tightening. It's a destruction of the base money supply. That's happening in conjunction with raising rates. That's only happened one other time in history, and it ended in disaster, I will remind you. So that's the fourth reason. And the fifth reason why this is particularly dangerous is because we now have a hiking cycle into record high asset prices. If you look at the total market cap to GDP, it's close to 200% of the underlying economy. And if you look at price to sales, it's at a record high, 3.5 times. So we are at an all-time record high in equities and in real estate. And that has never happened before. So those are the five reasons why, instead of listening to some Yahoo on CNBS who tells you go out and buy the first rate hike, because don't you know that's a great opportunity to buy stocks. Listen, the Fed is getting religion. They're actually doing the right thing. And that's going to lead down the road, if they prosecute on their plan, to a much better economy. You and I don't like runaway inflation. We don't like intractable inflation. You can't have a healthy economy. But the road from intractable inflation to stable prices is very perilous to asset prices. So we have to go through that first.
Right. Hey, so, Michael, I've gotten this question from a number of FSN community members out there. Inverted yield curve. Why? A, you have to explain what it is to them. B, why is it so detrimental? And why is it a virtual surefire sign of a recession?
Well, first of all, it's not my opinion why an inverted yield curve is pernicious to the economy. It's just a fact. So every time since World War II that it's inverted, it's led to a recession. And what an inverted yield curve is when long-term rates are lower than short-term rates. And this is why it's not only predictive of a recession, it's actually causality. It doesn't just presage a recession, it's a causality. Because you think about what do asset prices need? They need a constant inflow of new money creation. Well, when a bank is paying more to a depositor than they are making a loan, the margin is virtually zero or negative or next to nothing. The bank does not make that loan. They don't do it because they know a recession's coming and they know they have no interest, net interest margin on the loan. So money supply contracts dramatically and the fuel for asset prices disappears, and that causes and helps exacerbate the recession. That is the reason why every time the yield curve inverts, we have a recession within about a year, year and a half. Not always. Sometimes it's right away, and sometimes it's a year and a half to 2 years. But it comes rapidly, and it's coming again. I have no doubt in my mind.
And when you combine it with QT, quantitative tightening, which is in itself a liquidity event, so then you have less money to go into stocks, less money to go into bonds, less money all around to go into real estate. And somehow the Fed wants you to believe that the private sector will pick up the slack. You know, the Fed has been supporting the housing market through purchase of mortgage-backed securities since 08 and 09, since that crash. They've never really laid off the gas pedal. And, you know, when I consulted to a mortgage bank and they used to say, oh, you know, well, we're selling this paper to investors who were like, you know, JP Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo. The reality was they were selling them to the Fed.
Exactly. So the Fed wants you to believe, this is what the Fed is telling you, this is what they want you to believe. They want you to believe that they can go from QE, which was $120 billion a month of new monetary creation, new monetary fuel going into those asset prices. They can go from that to selling, destroying 80, 90, maybe 100 billion per month, be announced in May. They'll start May, June, and quickly, not my words, Powell's words, quickly ramp up to the max, to which would be between 80 and 100 billion a month of monetary destruction. At the same time, they take interest rates from 0% to 2 to 300 basis points this year above their R-star neutral rate, which they have no clue what that is. Now, do I believe that they're ever going to get there? No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'm a buyer of bonds right now in the portfolio because I don't think they're going to get to 7-8 rate hikes. That's already priced in. I don't think they're going to get anywhere near 3% on the Fed funds rate. Not even close. I think something's going to break much sooner than that. So now is a good time to buy bonds because I think we've reached the peak of inflation and we certainly have reached the peak of economic growth. But the Fed wants you to believe they can hike rates, and according to their own projections, they can do so without raising the unemployment rate. This is fantasy island on steroids.
Fed fairy tales. It's fairy tales compliments of the Federal Reserve. We've seen this over and over again. They think they can just talk the market up. Hey, like you said, when you're effectively starting a deflationary or just slowing down the rate of monetary creation, that in itself is deflationary and is going to really kick asset prices in the nuts, if you will.
How did you get to a point where home prices are up, 20% year over year? How did that ever happen? Rents up 30%. In fact, in Miami, rents are up 50% year over year as a derivative of rising home prices. I mean, how do you think that happens? With if money supply growth was fettered to what it should be, which is the mine supply of gold, mm-hmm. You're talking about a base money supply increase of maybe 1.5% per annum. That's what your money supply growth should be, which is pretty much commensurate with trend GDP growth in this country, given that we have almost zero population growth and low productivity. So how do you get a home price which just sits there and deteriorates? Anybody who owns a home knows you got to put a lot of money into it just to keep it, from falling down. You know, it's an asset that needs constant repair. Why is a home, how the heck does a home go up 20% a year? And in some places like, Naples, Florida, where I'm recording this interview from, it's up 80%.
Yeah, same here. Same here in Palm Beach County. Just last month, housing prices in my neighborhood went up over 10%.
A month.
And they didn't get any better looking, the houses. They still look the same way. They didn't get bigger. They didn't get more luxurious. And so with 30% of housing units being purchased by investors now, does that trend continue? Or do these rate hikes pull the rug out? I mean, my feeling is they're going to continue, because even if the Fed went forth on these rate hikes that they're planning, it's not going to be enough to bring inflation under control. At the very least, it'll bring stagflation.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp. is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project, with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, we have stagflation right now. I mean, I think we're going to, if the Fed, we would disagree on this. If the Fed actually prosecutes on the destruction of money, which is by definition deflation, if they destroy the base money supply by $1 trillion per annum, at the same time they're raising the cost of money, here's what's going to happen. The people who have purchased Wall Street, the Wall Street pigs, who have purchased homes for cash, they float a bond out there for almost nothing. Thank you, Federal Reserve. They use the proceeds to buy huge tracts of single family homes for cash, eliminating most first time home buyers. They've been priced out of the market. They do this for two reasons. They realize that, hey, I can actually get my assets to increase on my balance sheet, right? They created this huge asset bubble. The home prices are increasing. At the same time, I get to increase my rent. So my cash flow goes up as my assets go up. But if that turns around because home prices stop going up, they will have to sell those homes as the economy shrinks and those renters get unemployed and stop paying their cash flow. That's what's going to happen. It happened in 2008, and it's going to happen again if the Fed has the guts to follow through on their plan to not only raise interest rates, but destroy money supply at a record pace. Gary, throughout the entire QT program, which started in 2017, ended in 2019, the Fed drained, get this, a grand total of $700 billion. They had to stop QT earlier than they thought in 2019, because the repo market froze and the credit markets froze. Well, now we're being told that the Fed can do that same QT program into a weakening economy to the tune of $100 billion a month, over $1 trillion a year. And there's not a chance that's going to happen as home prices continue to rise and as oil goes through the roof and as the stock market continues to go up. It's just not mathematically or mechanically possible. So we'll watch to see who's correct. I'm on record. I'm out on a very small limb, I think, saying that if the Fed raises interest rates 200-300 basis points and drains $1 trillion of the balance sheet within a year, we'll be looking at a much different inflation dynamic and a much different asset price dynamic.
So crash the economy and crash the market, and you can bring inflation down. You know, going back to Volcker, 20%, everyone always talks about 20% interest rates. What they don't talk about is credit controls that went into place during that time, where basically everybody's credit card limit got cut by 50%. And the 1-2 punch of that really almost sent the country into a major depression. At the time, it was the worst post-war recession that the United States had ever had.
by a lot.
This is kind of the analog of that. It's just they're not cutting consumer credit. They're cutting effectively all the other asset bubble credit that's been in play all this time.
Yeah, you are correct. Now, let me be perfectly clear. I don't want to sound like I'm contradicting myself. The Fed is going to attempt to prosecute their plan. I think it ends in an epic failure. So then you and I do agree on the eventual outcome. What does the Fed do, Kerry, when the balance sheet goes from $9 trillion to $8 trillion, inflation crashes, asset prices begin to crash, credit markets freeze, Fed funds rates at, say, 1.5%, maybe they get that high. What does the Fed do then? Well, what they have to do is they have to reliquify the banking system. The money markets don't function. We go into a depression that makes, 1929 look like, Shangri-La. It would be the greater depression. So the Fed will have no choice but to try to reliquify and open up these markets. And I have no doubt they can do that. They can just say, hey, we open up the discount window. We will buy everything, including equities. They'll do that this time. I have no doubt they'll do that. But here's the thing. What message are you sending the dollar? And what message are you sending the sovereign bond market when you do that? So how much do you really solve when you go from stagflation to hyperinflation, which is where you would be? The Fed defines hyperinflation as 40% per month increase in CPI. I mean, you can very well get close to that. I would define hyperinflation as anything north of 40% per annum.
Yeah.
It's just insanity.
20% per annum really is hyperinflationary. Yeah.
Well, we're there. Well, if you define that, if that's your definition of hyperinflation, we're already there. I mean, home prices are already way above that. And I don't see how, meat prices, oil prices, commodity prices, wheat prices, food prices, you name it, it's up, way more than 7.9%. That's extraordinary. Trimmed, mean BS that they like to trot out. So pre-Boskin, we're at,
Don't forget hypnotics.
Yeah. Don't forget, if you don't want it, if you can't afford meat, you can always chew the grass in your backyard. So just by the switching out of what you consume, we can make. And also, hedonics. The meat is much better today than it was yesterday, much more tender. So it's not really inflation that you're seeing. So once they, and then they take out the trim meat, which means they take out the highest.
Well,
it's just wonderful. Let's take out everything that's going up and look at the core rate.
The Fed, will say, as a substitute for eating steak, you can just look at it on your iPad and your mouth will water. Hey, two things I want to cover, because one of them really was in the news for a day or two and then it disappeared. The truckers' rebellion in Canada. And then the government's financial countermeasures of basically debanking people who were involved in the movement led to a quiet bank run in Canada that received absolutely no publicity, no media coverage whatsoever, except maybe in places like Zero Hedge, one or two articles. And then the debanking, the deplatforming of Russia. I'm not even talking about the war. I'm just talking about knocking them off of SWIFT and can't use your Visa or MasterCard in Russia, or if you're a Russian citizen. Stuff like that really undermines faith in the system. But the fact that really Canada had a massive bank run after they introduced these measures, because people said, well, hey, the thought police are out there. If I'm even thinking that if I even believe or think I might believe that that Justin Trudeau is Castro's love child, they could just take all of my stuff away. Right?
Well, I mean, this is the end of dollar hegemony. And what you're getting to is people say, well, Russia, China, India, they're saying, wait, to Saudi Arabia, why in the world do I need to trade commodities through dollars? Why do I need to park my reserves in treasuries? I don't really need to do that, do I? Why not just park them in something that the United States government can't touch, which is gold, physical gold in my possession? So that's what's happening. And that dovetails with your comments on on Canada. So gold is going to become more and more a de facto, if not a de jure, world's reserve currency. But to your comment more about the truckers, what's coming, which I believe is coming after this next collapse happens, is going to be a CBDC, it's like a central bank digital coin, you know.
Yeah.
Then that makes it a lot easier to control you and your spending. Well, I just have to take your wallet away and there's no physical currency any longer. So what are you going to do? I can make your interest rate anything I want. I could stimulate the economy without even going through Congress. I could just increase the credits to your wallet. I can take them away too if you're not, if you're a bad actor. So this is what I think is going to happen. I predicted it in 2017. I said it's going to come, you know, way down, you know, down the line. And I think we're getting closer and closer to the point.
Yeah, well, and you know, they, oh, we want to get a little juice in the economy, make the GDP go up. We give everybody 10,000 credits, but got to spend it in the next 2 weeks,
or you'll lose.
Goes away.
Or you'll lose. Your negative interest rate on that, which is going to occur at a certain date, will be minus 10%. You're going to lose 10% of it every year or more. I mean, they can do anything they want. Or they can say, like you say, it's just like, we're taking them back. You have to spend them, you know, right now. Talking about not only the money supply increasing, but the velocity of money increasing. And then you get things like shortages because no one produces things for a loss. So price controls don't work. I mean, you could say, I can't sell a vehicle for more than X number of dollars, but the vehicle costs X plus, you know, 10,000 to produce. You don't produce the vehicle. And that's why you have empty shelves and hyperinflation. So that's where, I mean, unfortunately, that's where we're going. Unless I'm wrong, deeply wrong, and Powell says after the credit markets freeze and the stock market plunges 50 to 80% and no one can get access to credit and home prices are down and banks go, you know, bankrupt. And Powell says, I'm folding my arms because I'm letting the market work. I'm letting every asset find its proper price in the free market, and will let the depression work its way out. I just don't see that happening, but that's the only, Harry, that is the only real way out of this. And then we should link, and that would be a great time to link our fiat money back to gold. Mm-hmm. And this way we could, you know, if base money supply never went above, never grew more than 2% per annum.
Or the rate of population.
You'd never have any credit bubbles, asset bubbles. You wouldn't have to have the Federal Reserve at all. You wouldn't have to bail out the economy every time the stock market took a hiccup. It would work fine like it did in the late 1800s when we actually had.
You're always going to have asset. You're always going to have asset bubbles, but you won't have 10 of them at once. You got stock market, real estate, crypto.
Well, they won't be systemic, Harry. They won't be systemic. If you have an asset bubble in tulips, I mean, who cares if they blow up?
Right. Yeah.
Blow up, and the overall economy remains unscathed. But if you have equities, bonds, and real estate in a triumvirate of a bubble, and they all burst at the same time, you end up with a insolvent banking system and an insolvent nation, rather than a tulip bulb that doesn't really have.
Yeah, well, we're insolvent now, that's for sure. We got bubbles, student loans, we got used car bubbles, we got new car bubbles, we got bubbles in every market. Michael, do you ever think you'd live to see the day when you drove a new car off the lot and it was worth more money than you just paid for it?
No, but I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case because I'm waiting 6 months for my car to come from Italy. And I was told it would only be 2 months. So if it ever gets here, I hope it does increase in value. But yeah, that's indicative of how upside down. Hey, Kerry, did you ever think you would get paid to lend money to somebody?
Yeah, or get paid for doing nothing? Well, we've been doing that a long time in the U.S. But then to actually force people to do nothing and then pay them for the privilege of doing nothing.
Oh, no, Kerry, it was Russia that caused inflation. It wasn't the fact that we paid people $6 trillion, $5 trillion was monetized by the Fed, and told them, hey, don't go out of your house. Just sit home on your computer and order stuff.
And if you got to work, have a Zoom meeting, and, you know, everything will be fine. I mean, like all of those companies, all those tech companies have been the direct beneficiaries of of the fiscal insanity that we've gone through. And as Johns Hopkins study said, it cut the rate of infection somewhere between 0.2 and 0.8%. But it was worth shutting down the global economy because look at all the good that's come of it. Like the great resignation, right? All these people don't work anymore, Michael. Well,
don't leave your house or you will probably die. But here's $50,000 for every American family to go shopping.
Yeah.
But there's nobody there actually making anything. But if you can find it, go buy it. It's just going to cost you about 20% more.
Yeah,
it's a great way to run. It's a great way to run an economy.
Yeah, it's a good business model. They ought to be teaching that at Harvard Business School and all the Ivy Leagues. Oh, in fact, you know what? I think they already are. I think they are, and that's why we're in this mess. But hey, the beauty is, look, if you were smart and still smart, you can play this inflation thing and make a boatload of money with virtually no risk here, because the writing's on the wall. And if they decide to tank the economy and everything else, with however much debt you have, is going to make absolutely no difference in the scheme of things. All debts will be forgiven. We're heading for a jubilee. There is no other way to do this. And a complete restructuring of the economy, a complete restructuring of government, of the population's expectations of government, which they have fed like candy to a child, and the kid can't get enough of that candy, and then they can't figure out why he's got fatty liver disease. It's a mystery, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what our economy has become, this giant wish fulfillment machine where you wish for it and Uncle Sam will grant any wish you have, and that just can't continue on. It's not realistic.
Exactly. And don't forget how pernicious the debt jubilee can be in the short term, because who owns all this debt that you're forgiving? It's the banks.
Yeah, well, one shadow debt is.
And they go bankrupt, insolvent overnight, even though, you know, most of them probably are anyway, especially in the shadow banking system. So guess what happens? You have rapid deflation in the short term. Remember that. Debt jubilees are very deflationary.
Yeah, because one man's debt is another man's asset. And that is, so if you let it happen, then you have to recapitalize all the banks, strip all the bad assets off of their balance sheets, and then you kind of move on from there. But the inflation genie, look, you and I were fortunate in that we were alive during the 70s, and we're unfortunate because we're old now, but we remember this stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody else does. So this is your opportunity to really cash in if you're smart.
Yes, Kerry. And in the 70s, the economy was much more market-based than it is today.
Yes.
If you look at all those debt to GDP metrics, there were nothing like they are today. So the reconciliation of asset prices is going to be much more painful. So and listen, we have some shorts in the portfolio now. We own some precious metals. We have bond and bond proxies because we're getting ready for the disinflation and deflation to occur. Might not be in March. It might be in May. But I'd rather not, as they say, pick pennies in front of steamrollers, because this market is just about as dangerous a market that there has ever been.
Yeah. The only way that the stock market continues to go higher is if the Fed reverses its policy and we basically go into QE unlimited, not just QE, but just I think you can make the argument, Michael, that during the pandemic, we went into QE unlimited. So there's QE to infinity, but then there's QE, you have limits on it, but there was no limits to this QE. Just anybody, any problem, just print the money.
So the Fed had you're correct. The Fed had zero cap on how many bonds it was going to purchase.
Right.
In the junk bond arena and the corporate bond arena, and that didn't put it. We will buy whatever it takes. You know, Mario Draghi.
Right.
We will buy. We will print. We will counterfeit as much money as it takes to make these asset prices increase. It's coming again. That's when I will unwind all my shorts and go short the dollar instead of long the dollar, which has been a profitable trade for us. I will unwind those trades and get ready for intractable hyper stagflation.
Yeah, hyper Maybe they can keep it at 20%, but I rather doubt it. All right. Well, Michael, thanks for the insights again. You've been spot on here. We've been talking about this now for a few years, and your insights have been invaluable to me personally. I know you out there who are part of the FSN community really appreciate Michael's work here. And if you followed Michael, even if you didn't invest your money with him, which maybe you should, between you and your formerly employed financial advisor, you would have gotten through this thing. Okay. Well, we got to go. Pentoport.com, PENTOPORT.com. If you got a question for Michael, shoot me an email, KL@CarrieLutz.com. Don't forget, sign up for your free newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Michael, we will talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
God bless. Stay in peace, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.